The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. So again, welcome everybody. It's nice to practice together. Especially some of us, right, practicing on our own for these years during the pandemic, it's nice to come together. So thank you. As well as thank you to the people on the other side of the camera or on YouTube also. Quite something, right, how kind of IMC has really grown. So tonight I'd like to talk a little bit more or continue on this series that I'm doing about the seven factors of awakening. You wouldn't be surprised if I said there are seven factors. And I'm going to talk about number six. So I've done the first five. And so the seven factors of awakening are mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility. Tonight I'm going to talk about samadhi. And the next one after this is equanimity. So I'm using this Pali word, samadhi. I'll spend some time this evening unpacking that and what does it mean and maybe why I'm not using an English word that's often used. One reason is I like the sound of this word, samadhi. It kind of has that feeling, samadhi. It's kind of like this soft, spacious, maybe expansive experience. So the seven factors of awakening, they have these kind of like energizing factors, and we have tranquilizing factors, and then mindfulness, which is in between. So samadhi is part of the tranquilizing. It's with tranquility, samadhi, and equanimity. With investigation, energy, and joy being a little bit more energetic. So that gives a little clue about what samadhi means. For now, I'm going to use this definition. It's when the mind and body feel unified, settled, and steady, and there's a sense of well-being. Unified, settled, steady, with a sense of well-being. And the sense of well-being sometimes can be really powerful, or it can be really subtle. And I'll talk about this a little bit. But one thing before I talk about maybe a little bit more of a description of how it is or how we might cultivate it, I'll talk a little bit about why should we bother? Why should we even, you know, be concerned with, think about, practice with, learn about, whatever it might be, this idea of samadhi? And we might say that samadhi prepares the mind. It creates the conditions, it helps prepare the mind for some letting go and for some deep letting go. And it also prepares the mind for some deep understanding. So both this understanding and the letting go, they often go together. This practice, this tradition really emphasizes we have these greater understandings that it just naturally happens that the clinging, the craving starts to diminish as we start to understand and see how clinging and craving is a way that doesn't lead to greater happiness. It's not a source of lasting happiness. And so samadhi is a way when there's some settledness and steadiness, we can see this a little bit more clearly in exactly the same way in which if there were a telescope and we wanted to see something that maybe it's not so clear, not so obvious up in the sky, it's really helpful to stick this telescope on a tripod. So we might think of samadhi as this type of tripod that enables to see things that we wouldn't be able to see otherwise. And one of the first insights that we have with our mindfulness practice is, oh my gosh, my mind is out of control. I didn't realize how much my mind is like scattered and distracted and does everything except what I want it to do. This is, you know, I think all of us have this experience when we start a meditation practice, specifically a mindfulness practice. And so as the mind starts to get more and more still, as there a little bit more samadhi, then we start to see that, oh, this what seemed like was this just this out of control mind, this experience that's filled with thoughts and plans and ideas and fantasies, all these types of things. As the mind starts to get more still, we can penetrate through these, what seems like maybe a solid way in which the mind works. And we can see, oh, actually, these things are arising and passing. They come and they go. Sometimes really quickly, sometimes really at a longer duration. Sometimes they seem like they're flickering. Sometimes they feel like they're just moving like sludge. But with this samadhi, we start to see different characteristics of our experience beyond, oh, it seems like I'm never present. And this seeing this inconstancy allows some of this letting go, allows some of this softening and lessening of any clinging that we might be doing. So this is the direction in which our practice goes, is with towards greater and greater stillness and peace and sense of well-being. And so we can use this as a guidepost, too, with our practice. As we explore different ways of practicing, as we learn new things, is there a way in which we can use this experiences and ideas of steadiness and stability and well-being as a way to kind of direct the direction we want to go with our practice? How do we know if what we're doing is working or not working, or is worth persevering with or not? Is something, is it headed towards samadhi? So samadhi involves, as this kind of feeling unified, so it involves the whole mind and the whole body. In fact, this distinction between body and mind starts to blur and in some states even goes away. So it's this real sense of collectedness, unification, also this non-distraction, we might say, where things just are kind of like settling down. You know, I've heard Andrea Fella, maybe some of you have too, use this simile of a snow globe. You shake it upright and all the glitter goes, but then you just put it down and things just start to settle. In the same way, when the samadhi is present, as samadhi is kind of like this settling process. And one way that's nice of thinking about it as maybe like a snow globe is that instead of samadhi being this on or off switch, this idea you either have it or you don't, we can kind of think like, well, does it feel like the shaking is happening or does it feel like this settling is happening? So it's more like this recognition that there's, it's a spectrum, right? So samadhi is going towards calming, is going towards settling. It's not, is it there, yes or no? It's just one end of the spectrum of the amount of busyness and distraction we might have. So we might think of samadhi then as this sliding scale or a continuum of a spectrum, and we might, with our practice, gently encourage more of this sense of calmness. So when we sometimes hear this word, sometimes it gets translated as this word concentration. But I know certainly for me, for years at the first of my practice, I thought concentration was this real straining, bearing down, working really hard, way to practice. And yeah, the mind gets settled a little bit more, but it's missing that well-being quality when we do this. And it's missing this quality of ease. It's missing a quality of maybe it's rather than like stapling the mind onto the object, it has more of a sense of just being unified I don't know. Samadhi is a nicer feeling than just bearing down and really trying to focus. So there's a few qualities that are within samadhi that I'd like to highlight, to talk about, to help us remember that it's not just this bearing down, forcing the mind to really get concentrated. So one thing I'll say is that there's this, some of the qualities that we find within samadhi when we're kind of like moving towards that end of the spectrum of a little of more collectedness and unification and well-being. Some of the qualities we'll find is this steadiness, as it starts to become a bit more steadiness, supports investigation. So there's a little bit more investigation, or maybe investigation is not exactly the right word, but just as I said with the tripod, with a telescope, with the steadiness, we can see things differently. So in the as we're moving towards more and more samadhi, there's a seeing things a little bit differently than we might do with our regular everyday, in which we just go through our busyness. So there's this capacity to maybe look at what's happening, see it a little bit more deeply, to learn from what's happening in a way that's maybe in a relaxed, easy way for it to penetrate into our experience. So that's one quality that happens when there's samadhi. But also we can see that there's a certain refinement, we might use this word, refinement or delicacy of the attention. Sometimes when we're doing mindfulness and where's like the object and the mind drifts away, of course the mind drifts away. This is what minds do, right? And there might be of like, dang it! You know, just this way in which there's this little bit of, I don't know, forcefulness and trying to really stick back here. So when there's as the mind starts to calm down, there can be a little bit more like, oh, and maybe just with the subject, maybe just touching lightly instead of, I use this word, kind of like stapling on or forcefully on. There's this way in which it can be a little bit more gentle, a bit more delicate. And this delicate, gentle awareness can see things that are more subtle. So I just talked about how investigation enables to see things that you couldn't normally see, but also we can see things more subtle. And as the objects are becoming more subtle, the quality of the mindfulness or quality of the mind, maybe I'll say, it's also getting, I'll use this word, delicate or maybe refined or smooth or something like this. And so this is a quality that's happening too, this softening or maybe a little bit more subtle or delicate. So this is another quality of samadhi. But, oh, maybe I should say before I move on, part of the really powerful parts of samadhi is that with this, as the objects are becoming more subtle and the awareness is becoming more delicate, that might be the right word, I'm not sure, maybe, I'm going this with my hands, kind of like refined, it's not quite as rough, you know, like how sometimes there's material that feels rough and there's material that feels like silk or something like this. But that we're able to see more and more subtle ways in which we are clinging, more and more subtle ways in which there might be some aversion where we want things to be different, that we just might be so accustomed to that we don't notice. And then when we start to see, oh yeah, here's a little bit of clinging, here's a little bit of tightening here, I hadn't noticed. Then there could be some letting go, which also supports some deepening of the samadhi and more freedom, more ease. So another quality that is present when there's some samadhi is this idea of malleability or flexibility or plasticity. So the mind is a little bit more flexible. It's, especially when there's a sense of well-being, there's often, right, the mind doesn't do what we want it to do, especially like in the earlier in our practice, and if you've had a day in which there's been a lot of agitation, right, when we sit to meditate, we notice like, oh my goodness, my mind is all over the place. But as we start to settle, then with samadhi, the mind becomes a little bit more malleable and agile and maybe able to approach things a little bit differently. Sometimes there can be a way in with our practice, we have the sense like, okay, nope, this is what I do. I'm with mindfulness of the breath, and when the mind wanders, I come back and I count 1 through 10. And this can be really great to have this as a practice, but there can also be a time in which maybe that's not the best practice at that moment. Maybe it would be helpful to open up and do a little bit of loving kindness or some softness if we're really agitated with something that's some ill will is really prevalent with us, or maybe we're being really hard on ourselves and we're kind of like beating ourselves over the head with this kind of mindfulness. So this malleability is to be able to recognize what's needed here. What's the best way forward? I'm going like this with my hands, kind of like in a soft, gentle way. Not in the way that we have to find the most pleasant experience and flip around, but in a way that's born out of care, sensitivity to what's going to support some settling. Like, what would be helpful here? Should I stay with the breath? Maybe I'll just pay attention a little bit more to the exhale. Exhale can be a way in which we can like calm. Or as I said, maybe we could do some loving kindness. Third way, maybe we could open up the awareness and have this sense of being receptive. So instead of bringing the awareness to an experience, we more kind of like open up and allow the experiences to arise. These are like subtle differences, but when there's samadhi, there can be this malleability and this agility to recognize what's needed without bouncing around too much, trying to find just, you know, the perfect experience. And so, a quote here from the sutta, that sutta is this particular quote is all throughout the suttas in there a number of times. And I myself feel kind of inspired by this. So the Buddha is describing his own awakening experience. And he described that right before his awakening, enlightenment, he described his mind. And he said that his mind was concentrated, using this word samadhi, concentrated, purified, cleansed, unblemished, rid of defilement, malleable, wieldy, and steady, and attained to imperturbability. So right, this is why it's a factor of awakening, right? This is kind of helps creates the conditions in which awakening can happen. But I appreciate very much these words, you know, malleable, wieldy, you know, and steady doesn't mean, holding on for dear life. And I'm kind of emphasizing this over and over again because I've suffered a lot in my early retreat practice, with I had this idea that I just had to strive, strain as much as I could, and oh my gosh, it was miserable. it was really miserable. You know, I'm being on long retreats and feeling like, oh, no pain, no gain. I hadn't quite got the memo that there was supposed to be some well-being associated with this. So, of course, that's another quality of samadhi, is this sense of well-being. For me, this is like the ah part of samadhi. Like there's a sense of ah, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm here. I'm right here. Just collectedness, a sense of, okay, I'm here. So this well-being that comes with samadhi is really, not only is it an integral part of the practice and the experience, but it's actually really important. It's important for a number of reasons. One is the letting go, all these subtle letting goes, I'll say in the plural, that happens with the more freedom we find, the more closer or in the direction of awakening, is all about letting go. It's not about, you know, accumulating. So it's not about accumulating meditative states. It's only about letting go. And this is definitely how one gets into samadhi too, how you practice it. But the well-being supports of, oh, okay, yeah, I can let go of this, right? When we're in the middle of emotional distress or we're in pain, we are not in a place to let go of things. We can't let go of our habits. We can't let go of the usual way, our views of how things work, our ideas about ourselves. We just can't. So this well-being supports this letting go as well as the understanding. We see the understanding that things are changing. They're flickering. They're not what we thought they were. And that also supports the letting go, but so does well-being. And I'm using this vague word, well-being, because it shows up in so many different flavors and so many different ways with samadhi. So I kind of like this generic word, well-being, that I'll use for right now. But it's not only because it supports letting go that this well-being is really important. If we have some of this experience in our meditative experiences and our meditation sessions of experiencing some sense of well-being, then this starts to, we might say, permeate our experience that carries off of the cushion and into our daily life. What we start to experience sitting, we start to know, oh, this is available. The mind knows how to do this. The mind and body together know how to do this. And it starts to allow us some of this well-being to show up off the cushion. And this maybe allows for some emotional stability. This emotional well-being allows us to have a little more stability in our emotional life, which really allows our daily life off the cushion to unfold in a different way. So this is kind of like dipping into this sense of well-being. This also helps us to no longer be pursuing sensual pleasures. I need one more dopamine hit. I just need that. For me, it's cookies. Or maybe it's, you know, the internet or buying things or gambling. I don't know what, you know, all of us have things, right? If we start to have these experiences of well-being, then we start to realize, oh, yeah, these dopamine hits, they are actually inferior. They clearly are inferior to these sense of well-being in these meditative states. So these knowing that something better is possible, they start to lose their pull. They start to be less compelling when we're able to have some alternative experiences. And I would say it's often not until people have some meditative experiences of well-being that their relationships to pursuing pleasure really starts to shift. Right? I mean, human beings, this is part of our biology, is to pursue pleasure. So it's not until you experience deeper, more satisfying, more pervasive well-being than our experiences to all of what happens in daily life can shift. So in some ways, maybe I'll just emphasize this one more time, that the well-being is just as important as kind of like the settling. So these two things are happening, the settling steadiness and the well-being. And the way that we cultivate samadhi is we're cultivating both of these, both the well-being and the settledness. So to cultivate samadhi, it does take patience. It does take consistent practice. It's not something that will happen right away for many people. Some people do have a propensity for kind of like a settling. Part of this can be is how we spend our daily lives. That if you are a preschool teacher and you're having to keep track of what all the kids are doing, oh no, Johnny, don't do this, you know, Susie, don't do that, then, you know, you're always trying to keep track, then if this is how you spend your days, then you're getting really good at being aware of many things at once. Or if you're an office manager and or people are calling all the time, or customer service, you know, these types of things. It's different than if you have, for example, a profession that's maybe as a scientist who's trying to look through a microscope for, you know, you have to kind of really be focused and you don't have a lot of other sensory input, or mathematician or computer scientist or some of these things, right? So how we spend our days does have an impact what our professions are, or if you're I'll just leave that. I'll say that, how you spend your days, as well as some of it's a mystery. I don't know why. People don't know why. Some individuals, it's just a little bit easier than for other individuals. There's no telling why. But there's this way in which we can think about cultivating samadhi as, it's not all about bearing down, it's focusing. I think I've made this point in so many different ways, right? But one way to think about when we're cultivating this is that 50%, a good half of the practice, is about relaxing and letting go, and kind of like tuning into the ease, whatever ease is available. Even if that ease is not your dominant experience, that might just be a little corner of your experience, but not being dismissive of that quiet sense of contentment, or a little bit of sense of like, when the mind starts to settle down. At least 50% of the practice is tuning into that. Seems like this should be straightforward, but right, human beings, we have this negativity bias. We want to just tune into everything that's wrong. So this turns out not to be necessarily so easy to just stay with what feels comfortable, what feels okay, what feels good, what's pleasant, or even what's neutral. So 50% there. Another 25% maybe is just this attitude of receptivity. I'm going like this with my hands. It's kind of like an openness. This maybe has a quality of equanimity. So rather than going and trying to fix and make that be different and do this or something like this with our meditation, 25% of it is kind of just an openness. This can allow like things to arise and pass away without our chasing them or trying to change them or some way. And then it's only 25% where is this effort to kind of like stay focused or stay present on our experience. And often when with concentration practice, very common to stay focused on the breath, the sensations of breathing, or the movement of the abdomen, or often the feeling right here above the upper lip. But also there can be focus on loving kindness. Some of you know this loving kindness practice. There's a way in which the repetition, and that's kind of this warm-heartedness, really supports some samadhi. As well as a third way, there can be, rather than a particular object or loving kindness, a third way is maybe a little bit more open. But for an example, something might be just noticing the changing nature of whatever object is in our attention. So sound, but really the noticing of the sound arising and passing away and sensations in the body, but really the noticing is on the, they're flickering a little bit, they're not completely constant. This third way is a little bit less common, but for some people works really well. So these are the three different ways in which we might use that 25%. That's focusing. So one thing that I want to say is really important. Maybe, I don't know if it's the most important, it might be, is when we talk about samadhi, doing this practice, it's really important for us to pay attention to our relationship to this practice. Because if somebody says the word concentration, then two things often happen. And I've had this experience, but it wasn't in Rob Berbea, who was a fantastic Dharma teacher. He talked about this, and he's the one who kind of put words to this. This definitely is, I think, a lot of people's experience. Certainly was my experience. When we hear this word concentration, there's a way in this kind of, our sense of practice kind of shrinks, and it all becomes about measuring. Am I focused? Am I not focused? Dang it, that was a thought. Okay, I'm not focused. Okay, I'll stay here. So there's kind of this way in which they're like, here's the grind to get to samadhi. So this idea of measuring shows up. So I would say use this word samadhi with this emphasis on the awe. Samadhi, that's opening. And we're just moving along the spectrum towards steadying, calming, and more well-being. Because as soon as this measuring mind shows up, then there's kind of a collapsing, a strong sense of self. I'm not as concentrated as I used to be yesterday. I'm not as concentrated as that person sitting in front of me or that person sitting over there or whomever, right? All this chatter starts to come up, and that's not the direction we're going. So not only that, not only is there this measuring, but often if we have a sense of focus, we have to focus, then there's also this really subtle sense, maybe it's obvious, sense of aversion that arises. Dang it, I'm trying to concentrate. Don't those neighbors know that their dog should be quiet? And, you know, we have this little irritation, or why is this somebody I share the house with? Why are they right now decided to talk loudly on the phone or whatever it is? There's this aversion that creeps in if we have the sense that we have to focus. And of course, right, aversion is not a sense of well-being, is not a sense of receptivity. So really pay attention to the relationship. And is there a way in which we can stretch our idea of what samadhi practice is? I talked about these three different elements of well-being, focus, and being receptive. But now I'd like to stretch it even more and say, no matter what is happening in your samadhi practice, there's a way in which we're practicing perseverance. This is enormously helpful in our life. We're practicing patience. This is enormously helpful in our lives. Maybe if we're focusing on well-being, then we're noticing that, I was on the object and now the mind has wandered. Is there a way that I can come back to the object that's with a sense of warmth and gentleness and it has a sense of well-being, like, oh, okay, I'm just going to come back to the breath. That is also enormously beneficial. Or we might start to notice, oh yeah, there's not a sense of well-being here because I'm beating myself up because I'm not getting concentrated. And we might start to notice, oh yeah, this is what it feels like to have a judging mind. Ouch. It doesn't feel good. So even if you sit down and you want to be cultivating a little bit of samadhi, and you feel like samadhi is nowhere nearby, that's okay too. That's okay too. Because what we're cultivating will be such a support for our practice and for our daily life. And this practice gets cultivated in just the same way in which we might gain strength, you know, some physical strength, you know, by doing bicep curls, right? We don't get strong just by doing a few bicep curls. And we don't even notice that, oh, bam, oh, okay, now I'm stronger, right? It's just kind of like the repetition of doing this over and over again. And it often is the settling happens imperceptibly. And I know that for me sometimes, I haven't even noticed so much that the mind has gotten settled until like the bell rings. I'm like, oh yeah, there's a bell. And it just feels nice and it arises in the meditation experience. And there's a sense of, oh yeah, this is pleasant. Maybe I'll get up. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll stay. So there can just be this quiet settling that we don't notice until the end. Okay, so I think I'll maybe next week talk a little bit more about samadhi, but I wanted to introduce this idea as one of the factors of awakening, and now I'd like to open it up to some questions, if you have some questions about samadhi, cultivating it, the experience of it. Maybe can we use a microphone if somebody has a question? If you don't, that's okay too, but if there aren't any questions. I think if that's not true, we might have to turn up the volume here on the mixer. You can see which she has the blue microphone. So if you look at the... Okay, is that...
Yeah, yes.
Good evening,
Diana. Thank you. The practice today was very nice, although all the things you had mentioned with measuring and aversion and just comparison were all over the place. And samari, I hope I'm saying that right, was nowhere near what I was just striving towards, and I was just like... I'm like, oh, I'm waiting for the bell to ring. And yes. I'm like, oh, no, that's not what I want. And so I just, how can I cultivate that loving kindness? I'm not supposed to say anything, am I? I know there's the whole, may you be at peace, safe, and et cetera.
There's a way in which with mindfulness practice, we might have this idea of like, okay, we just have to be with whatever arises. But if you want to do a little bit of samadhi, there can be a little bit more intentional movement. And I would, there's a few things. One is, I'll start with, it's like maybe the posture. It really makes a difference, it turns out. If the posture, if the body has some alertness, it kind of allows the body, the mind to have some alertness as well. So I'll just say that's one thing. The second thing is, I think one thing that's really impactful, maybe two things. One, if you had this thought, oh, I'm just waiting for the bell, it's not what I do. One thing to try is to label, oh, that's a thought. It doesn't have to be a problem, it's just a thought. Our minds think. And then just come back to the anchor. Often the breath is the anchor. I don't know if it is for you, but so just to label it thought, and come back. And that kind of interrupts the momentum of the thinking, like, oh, I've been thinking, I don't want to be thinking. The last time I wasn't thinking as much, and I hope I don't think later, and the bell's going to ring. When is she going to ring the bell? What time is it? It's got to be this time, right? This is the mind, right? Our minds do this. So just this quiet note thought can maybe interrupt that momentum and come back. A second thing is, and this is not always easy, but it's something to pay attention to, is to notice the manner in which the mind comes back to the object. I use this expression, is it like a, dang it, get back here? You know, and if you feel that, so what happens is we see this 100 times, we see this 1,000 times, honestly, we see it many times, and then we're like, you know what, this just doesn't make sense anymore, and it starts to just be a little bit softer. So if we start to see, experience, notice the way in which we're on the object, the mind drifts away, then there's a waking up, and in that moment, is there cursing, or is it like, oh, okay, I've wandered, and then notice how the mind comes back. Can there be a gentle, warm-hearted way? And this is subtle. This is very subtle, and it can be a really strong habit, very strong habit to want to, you know, like I kind of was doing this, right? You know, to just come back with this a little bit of like a jerking it back, a little bit of aversion. So don't beat yourself up. If after you've seen it 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, 1,000, 10,000 times, it's something that just starts to shift. So this is where kind of the repetition of continuity of practice really comes in. Was that helpful?
Very much. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Diana.
You're welcome.
I attended earlier this year a retreat on the aggregates. We did the aggregates, and it seems to me we've been meeting since that retreat to discuss the retreat because it just seems so rich that there's a lot of space in the study of the aggregates to try and find different ways to samadhi or samadhi sort of generically or more, I don't know, it occurs more easily when you're studying the aggregates. I wondered if you had any thoughts about that.
Well, maybe I'll say this, that the aggregates are different aspects of our experience, let's say that. And they are a little bit more subtle. And so having to see subtle, kind of like the mind has to settle in order to see subtle. And it's that tuning into the subtleness kind of creates the mind settling. And I would say that's kind of what supports maybe the samadhi. And then, I don't know, maybe I'll stop there. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Yeah. And often we can't see the aggregates unless there is some settling. And the more we're looking at them and kind of investigating, playing around, exploring them, you know, the quieter the mind has to be.
Well, it occurred to me from that retreat and also through this discussion of samadhi, how much of this practice is really learning about how your mind works.
Yes.
I mean, it's almost like a scientific study of how the activity of the brain works.
Yes, I would say that. It's so much about this. The expression is knowledge and vision. So being able to understand things and see things. Yep, that you don't see, right, without this practice. Yeah. Okay, so we're at the top of the hour here, so just a warm wish for everybody having some well-being and some settledness and steadiness in their lives. and an appreciation for practicing together. And I'll stay up here if you have other people have some other questions. Otherwise, I wish you all a wonderful rest of the evening. Thank you.